I'm Kier from Gallifrey Public Radio, a Doctor Who fandom podcast and part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, a show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. As always, I'm Chris, and today I'm really excited because I pulled something just straight out of thin air to get a super wonderful guest today. I've got Robert Secundus. Robert, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. I'm very excited to record a podcast for the first time about one of my favorite games of my younger years, even though it's not a very good game. I think it's fascinating, and I'm very happy to be here, very happy to talk about it.
I mean, we all liked weird things when we were younger, and I'm excited to get you recording a podcast even before Zach from Battle of the Atom, because you write stuff further over there, but you record with me first.
Battle of the Atom has never asked me, and do I feel bitter about that? Is that like boiling and seething in my heart, ready for me to do a heel turn and like conquer the Xavier Files media empire? Maybe, maybe not. I am very, very glad to do this podcast, and if other people want to have me on podcasts, I'll be more than happy to pop on. We'll see.
And Zach, obviously I'm kidding, I love you.
He's a wonderful, wonderful man. Zach, I'm not going to heel turn on you, I promise.
But today, we are here to talk about Marvel Nemesis Rise of the Imperfects. From what you were telling me before we started, Marvel around 2005 was just being a really interesting place. This was well before I started reading comics, so I definitely don't know all of what was going on then.
Yeah, I was like 15, and I think like a lot of people of our generation, I wasn't super reading comics, but I was following comics. The internet was at a point where you could read a few trades and follow the right blogs and get the right like guidebooks, and you could have a general idea of what was going on even if you didn't live near a comic shop. But 2005 was really weird because it's like, it's right before Marvel as we know it. It's 3 years before the MCU launches, and it's 1 year before the Civil War comic like changes the way that the 616 Marvel Comics universe operates, where it becomes event focused, and there are these like years and years long plot lines that spin off into each other. Mostly with Brian Michael Bendis at the lead. It's right at the point when Marvel seemed to be thinking about switching its emphasis to the Ultimate Universe. And so 2005 is like, I think, right past the crest of the Ultimate Universe, when Ultimate Spider-Man was in its 70s, Ultimates 2 was coming out, and the 616 was ready to like come back strong and take over. House of M had just launched, so we had started to get those kinds of events things, but not really, not fully yet. And since Iron Man wasn't out yet, there was no like gigantic media thing that was steering the ship. Marvel would take these like weird experiments. Marvel would try to do things to try to access new audiences, to get new crossover media produced. And I think Marvel Rise of the Imperfects is just like a fascinating intersection of all these things. We're like, Marvel isn't sure what direction it wants to take its characters in. Things are changing. You can have video games just pop up out of nowhere that aren't about one character, but are about the whole Marvel universe. And you don't need to worry about, like, is it MCU relevant and stuff like that. It's a time that's a bit chaotic, but is, looking back, you can just see it's so filled with potential, and there are so many interesting things happening around that time. So yeah, that's like the weird mix, the weird chaos that brings about the imperfect comic and the imperfect video game.
One thing that I really wish I had had time to grab was the comics that they had tying into this game. I got caught up trying to do research for other episodes, and that just kept getting pushed off. So that wasn't something I was able to actually take a look at, as horrible as that is.
I've got some good news and bad news. The good news is, like, if you do find the time, they're worth, like, taking a gander at. But the bad news is, like, you should feel okay, because they aren't, like, that great. And they deviate pretty sharply from the game plotline. It's just so we have on record the comic, the Imperfect comic was started to release a couple months before the game came out in June, and continued to release after. And it was written by Greg Pak with art by Renato Arlem, and covers by Jay Lee. And Jay Lee did a lot of the character design and like art for the video game itself. And so there is this art connection between the two. And Greg Pak ostensibly worked with EA to create the story for the game. I couldn't find the actual interview because Games Radar has nuked Newsarama archives, but I could find references to an interview where he talked about developing the story with EA. But the comic is about heroes being infected with alien goo DNA that makes them perfect versions of themselves, but also relinquishes control of their own actions to someone else, which is somewhat similar to the game, but there's like an alien device and this like core emotional heart to the series where characters are grappling with their feeling, like their like desire to be perfect, their desire to eliminate all the problems in their life. That doesn't carry over to the game. You don't get Storm like having really emotional moments thinking about, like, I was worshipped as a goddess, and for a moment, I felt like one. You don't have the Thing, like, thinking about how, in the scope of the Marvel Universe, he's not the Hulk, he's not the number one guy, he's just, like, always number two. You don't have Spider-Man thinking, like, no one would die around me if I was perfect. What you do get in the comic series, you do get these, like, great character voices and great character moments. Unfortunately, the imperfects are really weird. They're underdeveloped in the comic series. And that's a shame, because I think one of the cool things that the game was trying to do was set up this comic adaptation so that you could play this game series, and it was intended to be a series, and the series would add these characters into comics that could impact the Marvel universe. And these characters, since they were designed by Jay Lee, who is a guy who did stuff like The Darkness and Witchblade, they're not the typical approach to characters you see in Marvel. It was a different aesthetic, a different kind of idea of characters, that could have added something really interesting if they had been developed further. They're from this alternate perspective of, like, late 90s, early 2000s design, but also because of that core notion of, like, being imperfect, of this play between, like, perfection and something inherently flawed. They fit in wonderfully, I think, with the Marvel approach to characters, where the core of a character normally is some kind of flaw, or lack. But the comic series doesn't have room for them. The structure is super weird as it tries to like vaguely match up with what happens in the game, but sends people like on spaceships and into South America and into all weird things. The comic, do I recommend taking a look at it? I do. Do I think it's terrible if you don't get a chance to read it? No, I think it's not the best work of anyone on that team. What I'd love to know is, I'd love to hear more from everyone involved, from Jay Lee, from Great Pack, about what the process of this was like, because the fact that they were both involved in the game work and yet the comic is so different and it deviates so sharply. I just would really like to know what the creative process was like and why the comic resulted in the form that it did.
I mean, that's something I'd really like to know too. That, why they decided to work with EA, and then why they decided that that was it and they weren't working with EA anymore.
I think that the game was so critically panned that that really soured the Marvel relationship. I know that there was a sequel in development at EA that ended up being canceled. And all that, like, the only remains of it that exist on the internet are a few screenshots where it showed Captain America, like, menu screens, and a controller that showed, like, slightly more advanced control than you had in this game. I get the feeling that the relationship between Marvel and EA, given in, like, the PR statements, was a lot more developed than the actual relationship, and that vague design sketches and vague story notes passed between them without much detail, and that's what resulted in this very weirdly structured, interesting, but ultimately unsatisfying comic that is intended to launch these characters and then doesn't focus on them. I imagine that, like, there must have just been something in the communication, some gap in editorial and marketing that led to that. But that's only a guess.
I mean, anybody who worked on the game, come tell us how we're wrong. I would love that. So you said you weren't super reading comics when this came out. Which stuff were you really paying attention to?
So I was reading mostly the Ultimate Universe. So I had seen some Jay Lee stuff in Ultimate Fantastic Four. I loved Ultimate Spider-Man. Ultimate Spider-Man was the thing that got me really into comics. It was the thing that kind of got me into thinking about narrative and studying narrative and fiction at a young age, which dictated the rest of my life, for better or worse. But I was interested in stuff that expanded out to show the full scope of the Marvel Universe. I loved reading about things like House of M on blogs. I loved picking up RPG guides that would break down long histories. I really loved the 90s cartoon of Spider-Man, where it felt like any episode, any random character from Marvel could show up and I would learn about someone new, that around the corner, there would be Daredevil, there would be Captain America. I loved the idea of the shared universe. So I think if I had had this comic as a kid, a comic where it's just like the Thing and Elektra hang out, I would have probably really enjoyed it. It wouldn't have aged well for me, but it was the kind of thing I really was looking for, where you might not know the full continuity, but you could really dive into individual characters. Again, it's Ultimate Spider-Man and Brian Michael Bendis' approach to the Ultimate Universe, where he continually tried to show the full scope of what Marvel did and could be, while keeping it new and unladen of all of the heavy continuity. That was the central Marvel thing for me, by far.
No, 2005, I was graduating high school, definitely didn't have money to read comics, and you know, I was running track and cross country, so I wouldn't have had time anyway. You make me feel so old, even though it's probably only a few years.
Yeah, no, that's 2009 I graduated, so very, very short time difference. I think honestly, things were accelerating so much that it might be two different eras of the internet, where it was much easier to keep up with comic stuff, even if you didn't have the money to buy anything by 2009 than it would have been when you were graduating in 2005. It's weird how people of our generation, of really similar ages, of similar hobbies, we can look at something like Marvel or video games, and that short gap of just a few years, that's a console generation. That's an entire like paradigm shift in the comics industry or in nerd culture on the internet. It's weird how quickly when we were teenagers, things passed and things changed.
Just for some weird context, it was maybe eighth grade, but definitely in high school, I went from Napster being new to you better not try anything like that, because it's all just whichever flavor of the week is popping up and giving you viruses.
Napster missed me entirely. And by the time I was able to use the internet, I had known several people who had like gotten angry letters from their cable company about piracy and how they were going to send their addresses to the FBI or whatever nonsense happened as the story got passed by telephone from nerd to nerd in high school. I don't think comic piracy was huge then, but it must have been a thing. It must have been a thing somewhere. It was just primarily people going on Wednesday, getting their pulls, sitting down, and immediately typing up summaries for me of everything they encountered. And I would just have a few bloggers that I would follow voraciously. Like, what is House of M? What's going on? Who is this Wanda Maximoff? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we're going to go check the Wayback Machine to see if we can find evidence of early 2000s comic piracy, and then not tell anybody about it because you should pay for your comics. Well, I dropped some promos for a few other shows.
Well, hi there. I'm Kayla, the host of Strikes My Fancy podcast. Have you ever wondered why we dream? Maybe you're struggling with your mental health and you need some guidance. Or perhaps you just enjoy listening to people chat about things they love. Strikes My Fancy has all of that and more. With rotating series and new and exciting guests in each episode, I keep it fresh, entertaining, and educational. Come explore with me and discover what it is that strikes your fancy. You can find my show on strikesmyfancy.podbean.com or Apple, Spotify, pretty much anywhere that you listen to podcasts. I look forward to you being a part of my journey.
Hello, I'm Anthony.
And I'm Dr. Issues.
And we're hosts of Capes on the Couch, the podcast where comics get counseling.
Superheroes don't always get to go home happy. That's where we come in.
We offer psychiatric and mental health analysis of comic book characters.
So check us out at capesonthecouch.live and across all social media platforms at Capes on the Couch.
Those are some great shows you should check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So, Robert, this game, I do have one other confession here. I have played it. I have the Xbox version. It's in the storage unit right now. So, to super prepare for this one, I had to remember from me playing it, it was like 3 or 4 years ago when I picked it up, and watch a bunch of YouTube playthrough videos.
Yeah, I had the GameCube version. I have the GameCube version. But I don't have access to a GameCube or a Wii, so I also had to catch up with the YouTube videos, which surprised me, because I played this game a lot as a kid, and I never beat it. And I always had the feeling that, like, there was some level frustrating me that was lopping me off at, like, the halfway point or a third way point, and that there would be so much more to explore. And then I watched the playthroughs, and I realized that, like, I was 2 or 3 levels away from the end of the game. And this game was just much, much shorter than I expected. I think the the best long playthrough on YouTube is 4.5 hours. And that's with messing up lots of levels and dying and coming back over and over again. And that feels pretty short compared to what a game like this, I think, should be, that's trying to capture the full scope of the Marvel Universe. It was weird how many memories came flooding back as I watched each cutscene and as I watched the gameplay, and how I could feel. Like, it's very rare that I remember how games felt without picking up them again, but watching the playthroughs, it was like, oh yeah, the hitboxes on those generators are weird, and I don't like punching them. I can feel that watching the playthroughs again, which was a weird experience. What did you think about the game overall when you played it?
I was not a huge fan. Part of it might have been because this is like the first thing I actually played on Xbox. And so I wasn't sure if it was the Xbox controller just not feeling right to me, or if it was the game for a while. Then I realized, you know, it's the game just kind of being sloppily controlled and dark. I don't know. I just have this thing where I like to see what's going on, you know?
Yeah, the lighting in the game is weird. Sometimes the controls feel good if you are like playing with a friend. Like, the multiplayer is its own fun experience. And if you don't have to deal with all of these weird oddities, waves of enemies, camera issues, then it feels good to tap A a bunch of times and have Wolverine flip all over the place. But if you have to do objectives and platforming, or not platforming, but wall running and stuff, then everything feels a little wonky. For me, it was like the first game I remember as a teenager getting and like having a little bit of a critic voice pop out, where I knew it was bad. I didn't love it because I was a naive child. I was a naive child, but that's not why I loved it. I loved it because as it unfolded, like, I could see what they were going for. I could see what the aim was in the design documents. To give this game where you were introducing gamers to the full scope of the Marvel Universe, where it felt like you had no idea what character might pop up next, whether it's the Human Torch or Elektra, whether Magneto will show up, or Spider-Man. Spider-Man shows up pretty late in a game for being the most popular character at the time. And a game that felt like it was trying to capture a lot of the feel of 3D fighters, but make something accessible like Super Smash Brothers. I could see the stuff that it was aiming for, and then as I played it, obsessively trying to beat it, trying to experience the full thing, it just kept being like, okay, now I know that games aren't just like great or terrible. I know that games like have specific problems, and I can sit down and think about them and make arguments about them and what could improve a game and what causes flaws. So I really have a fond memory of this because I did enjoy playing some of it. I did recognize its problems, but I have a fond memory of like looking back and being like, okay, I can talk about video games now critically. I can talk about this stuff the same way I would other kinds of art. I was still a child, so obviously my arguments weren't great. But I think it's a fond memory for me because it's like an important step in being a person who plays video games, of being able to like treat them a little bit more like an adult than before, when it was just, this is garbage, this is the thing I love, etc.
One thing that really excited me looking at the back of the box was there's all these characters in here. And I mean, just looking at it and the idea of it, it should be really cool. Because where else are you going to have these like 18 characters, and a lot of them just being, at the time, random ass characters?
Yeah, it feels like the selection is from people who really loved the idea of just surprising you. And most games, I think, in Marvel's history before this, were so IP-focused that this is the first one that goes, no, it's not just the movie or the X-Men or this line. It's the shared universe is cool. And if you put a game in the shared universe, it's going to be great. And I think Ultimate Alliance captured that a bit, but Ultimate Alliance doesn't have the same like visceral feel of a brawler. I think probably it's not until the Avengers game that just came out this year that something actually tried, and according to some people at least, succeeded in evoking that cool feeling of looking at that box and going, who are all these characters? I must know all of them. Like, I imagine in 2005, a lot of kids didn't know who Daredevil was. And right now, a lot of kids might not know who Kamala Khan is. And in both cases, both games could have sparked a love for life, which is something that you talk about on this podcast a lot, how it's the cool thing about a comic or a game is you can pick it up and then go, oh no, I love this character now forever. This is a new experience for me, but this is going to change things. So yeah, at least that like goal of what is on that box art is something that I think is really wonderful.
Yeah, because coming into this game, you have the Daredevil movie from 2003. You've got two of the X-Men movies by that point, X-Men and X2. The Fantastic Four movie was somewhere in there. I didn't feel like looking that up because I don't want my computer to remember it exists. I mean, Spider-Man has always been a popular character. Venom hadn't popped up in any movies at that point, but I mean, he's Venom. If you know Spider-Man, you know Venom. So, I mean, really the only super, super obscure character coming into this really should have been Iron Man. Maybe Captain America.
So weird to think that Iron Man of this cast is the one that no one would know about, when it would just be a couple of years and then Iron Man would become the most important character in Marvel-like history. That's wild.
I mean, looking back on it, the roster, at least the composition of it, ages pretty well. Because you've got people that, I mean, people know who they are, but they're not all the super, super popular. You don't have any teams super overrepresented or anything. You've got as decent a split between male and female characters as I would actually expect to have, which, you know, it's still not where it should be, but it's about where I expect it to be.
And they balance that out a little bit more with the imperfects. I have this weird theory too, that like development was really short on this game, which is why the story, which is again broadly similar to the comic, evil scientist trying to create an army of superheroes to fight alien forces on his home planet. I think the story is barely communicated in the game. The few cutscenes that there are weird FMV videos, and the lines of dialogue that characters say are oftentimes just repurposed fight dialogue. But I think one of the weird things that happened along the way in development as it was shortened was some of the imperfects were repurposed Marvel characters. Because I look at someone like Wink. Wink, who has the teleporting power, and I look at her and I go, this is clearly Nightcrawler. This isn't just a teleporting character. This is a character who bamps around in like bits of smoke and has swords as her primary weapon and is all about agility and bouncing around. And I don't know if at some point they were like, we need more female characters, or Marvel was like, you can't use X, Y, or Z, or we need more of a balance. But it feels like in a lot of cases, things were brought over or changed somewhere in development from where they were set out. Solara too. Solara feels like the way that she builds on the Human Torch, like gameplay and stuff. There are a few ones like that that feel like they didn't just clone the character or reskin the character, but they at some point looked at their roster and went, we need to mess with this. And things changed significantly. I don't know. Again, it's all guesswork because there's so little out there on this game online other than just reviews trashing it. Rightfully trashing it, but trashing it.
So as we've kind of alluded to, this game did come out for Xbox, GameCube, and PlayStation. All right around the same time. Nihilistic Software, that's a very good name for somebody to have developed this. There was also a PSP version and a Game Boy Advance?
I think DS.
Game Boy DS, yes, that's right. Game Boy DS version of this. I basically forgot they existed because I'm so used to the handheld versions of console games just being downported piles of garbage.
Yeah, and I think I couldn't find, I'm sure it's out there, but I couldn't find footage of the mobile versions, which is a shame because apparently the PSP had Dr. Doom and Captain America's playable characters as exclusives, which is could be interesting. I don't know how Dr. Doom would fit into the story.
The only thing I could find was Classic Game Room doing a review. And I mean, they're kind of my go-to reviewers on YouTube, and sucks because I'm getting to the point where they stopped doing reviews. But they do actually look, I hate to say better, but better than the console versions, which is just weird.
Really? That's wild. I will need to look up that review then. I guess maybe some of the problems of the consoles couldn't be replicated in the mobile games, because one of the problems is it's so muddy and dark, and on a mobile game where you're like often playing it outside and stuff, that would absolutely kill the game. So maybe I don't know. I can envision some possibilities for why it might look better. I gotta ask, I know the graphics are weird, but what do you think of the designs, especially of the new characters?
Well, first off, I want to say I'm used to this era of gaming anyway, so these graphics aren't going to bother me at all. But the design of the characters, they certainly don't look wonderful, but they look pretty good. There are definitely people I could have seen coming into the comics. Maybe not like your super bright 60s Marvel, but for 2005, when they started coming out, I could definitely see them being in the comics, and I wish that they would have. I'm sure there's crazy licensing issues now with them coming out in a game worked on by EA.
Yeah, I think the idea was that they would share the rights or something, but I imagine as the relationship soured, they became unusable, which is a shame, especially for like Johnny Ohm. Johnny Ohm, I think, is a delight. Just this guy covered in electric nodes with a fantastic name. Or Brigade, who is literally a brigade of soldiers turned into one soldier. That is such like a goofy, ridiculous, nonsense Marvel idea that I love. That I love intensely. Just this man is 100 men turned into one large man.
See, now there's two characters like that Marvel has lost, because they also lost all the motorcycle guys coming together to form a bigger motorcycle guy.
That's right. Team America? Is that it? Oh, man. Imagine a world where Team America and Brigade hung out. Just like, and maybe Jamie Madrox. Just all the characters that are lots of people, multiple people turned into a person. The Monet twins. They should all get together and hang out. It's a shame because I feel like though Paragon is especially problematic, in the hands of a good writer, she could have been a great addition to the Marvel Universe. Woman of color who is has this like very interesting and weird backstory of now being like the like perfection science experiment and the only hope of this weird doomed planet. But also a planet that she has no reason to care about, because the people, her only interaction with the people there have only done harm to her. Like, there are so many interesting stories that I could see spiral out of this weird, goofy nonsense. Which again, the nonsense is oftentimes problematic, but in the hands of a good writer who could, like, address that stuff directly, I really think some of these characters could have been interesting. Some of the stuff hasn't aged super well as far as the design goes, because it does look like the guy that did Witchblade did these. But it could have been a foundation for interesting updates. I don't know.
And who gets the design, you know, spot on the first time anyway?
Right. One of the great things about these shared universes is getting to see people iterate over the decades and build on what came before and perfect things. Oftentimes things start imperfect and then get better. And it's a shame that the people that worked on this game didn't get to do that. If they had like the time to develop more than just the three environments you run through over and over, or a control scheme for the brawling that had maybe five more moves, something that would have upped the complexity just a bit, the time to like hone the controls, add bits of story, iterate on the designs, a sequel could have been incredible. But we're never going to see that. We're never going to get it. And I don't think we're ever going to get something from Marvel that takes this many risks again. Because if you look at something like The Avengers now, it's all about taking the multimedia mass MCU property and creating something that will build enthusiasm for it, rather than going, here's something wild and different, an aesthetic that may appeal to a new audience, a medium that may not have heard of Marvel before that we're going to try and bring in. That whole, I think, approach to stories and to licensing is gone, which is a shame.
No, I think the closest we'll get now is DLC to a game that's already pretty popular.
I think that's right.
Which sucks, because I don't usually get the DLC. Unless I get the definitive Game of the Year version or something.
Yeah, I get DLC because most games I buy about 10 years after they were released on Steam sales. I love this period in Marvel because of all the possibilities. And I don't love now that we have the opportunity to do stuff like this, that so much stuff feels so safe. That like, when you have a comic adaptation of, say, the Spider-Man PS1 game, it doesn't feel like it takes the same risks the Siri does. I almost always prefer weird and bad to mediocre and normal. I think these kinds of failures are always going to be more interesting to go back to than just, yeah, that tie-in comic was fine, or, you know, this Marvel game is okay. It looks like the MCU, but worse. Yeah, I miss the possibilities that were there in 2005.
You're one of the people that went and bought X-Men Destiny, weren't you?
Which one was X-Men Destiny?
That was the one where you could create your own character, and then I think it was a few months afterwards the studio shut down.
No, I never bought that, but I remember reading, like, I remember reading about it and being very excited for it. But it was one of those things where, you know, I had gotten, I couldn't afford a game for a long time or whatever, and by the time it had passed me by. That's an interesting one to revisit. I'm going to make a note of that. Because, yeah, I love the idea of sitting down and just making your own Marvel character, making your own mutant. Imagine if we had gotten something like that now, where we have a Krakoa society simulator or something. Something that has all the possibilities of the X-Line right now and really, like, lets you interact with that. Again, that would never happen, but it would be a lot of fun.
That just makes me wonder, what would the editors do if there was a game where you could do that, and I went and created their new secret character just totally on accident?
That's interesting. Interesting. I wonder if for properties like this, that's not a reason why there isn't an emphasis on character creation anymore, is because of weird legal incidents like that, or the possibilities of them, or just like wanting to minimize players and consumers making their own, like, having a fanfic approach to the product rather than a directed approach to the product. That would be wild if you sat down and made Pog or Pog or whoever accidentally in a game like that. That would be a delightful problem to have.
I wonder if we know somebody we could ask about that.
There must be somewhere on comics Twitter, there must be a comics lawyer person. We'll need to look out for that. Charles Sewell. Gotta ask Charles Sewell. He would have an idea. He's a lawyer. He writes comics. He'd be the guy.
Sweet. I will check on that. At some point, we will get a bonus episode on that. Even if it's just me talking and reading Twitter messages. But until then, just looking at this game, I guess we have to compare it to the Marvel Universe as a whole. Because I really don't want to compare it to the little run of Imperfects the comic had. What do you think this really gets right, looking at like the whole Marvel Universe?
It gets right... It doesn't get right the character voices, which is weird. A lot of characters say, I'm going to kick your, or let's open up a can of, which is very odd. But it does get right the designs of the characters. It does get right the feeling that you have of opening a Marvel crossover, the way that anyone could pop up and anyone could interact and change the nature of the narrative. Where you can have this billionaire in a war machine suddenly hang out with this ninja lady who throws blades at people, and then a goo monster from space, and it all somehow makes sense, and you don't know what's coming, you don't know who's going to become important for who, and you don't know whether what you're going to see next is going to change the universe forever or whether it's going to go away. Playing the game felt to me back then like reading an epic crossover comic feels now, not so much in scope, but in possibility. And I think that shows that for all the flaws of the game, what I think must have been like really terrible development and limited time and budget, the people designing this probably really did care about Marvel Comics. The fact that they were able to get that feeling of the universe itself makes me think that they must have had some love for it. They must have.
I mean, there's no way they would have gone with this roster if they didn't have at least somebody who loved it telling them which characters to use.
Yeah, absolutely. I think above all else, it's the roster. It's the roster, and it's the attempt to expand the roster with the Imperfects that I think it gets right.
What do you think this one really gets wrong?
Again, the voices, the thing is angry in a way. Spider-Man isn't quite as quippy as you want. Magneto is a bit more evil than he ever should be. All the voices are off. The plot is just... It's almost incomprehensible at times. The approach to using things like FMVs is just absurd. It's absurd that they could just have comic panels for cutscenes, and they went with these things that just look so strange in a comic book video game. And I guess it doesn't show us the full scope of Marvel's New York City, because it's really like two or three environments. And even though it feels like it's brimming with possibilities of what characters might arrive or where it might go next, as far as the plot goes, it doesn't feel like Marvel's full New York. It doesn't ever feel like you are running around in the world outside our window. It feels like a tech demo of a bridge, a street, and a house in New York.
That was really the main thing for me, too. I mean, when I think Marvel, I think real-world places. And, I mean, even if you go back and look at the PS1 Spider-Man games, you look at, like, almost anything from the 16-bit era, you get more environments to play around in. Even when it's the stupid, inevitable underwater level in a Super Nintendo game, it's still something different.
Yeah, I think the PlayStation Spider-Man game, or iPlayer on N64, that's probably my gold standard for how a comic book game should feel. And that's a game that also feels like it's brimming with possibilities. Captain America will show up at one point. Carnage, Doc Ock is a wild thing to go for. And it actually succeeds on everything, or on most things it tries to do. It shows you feel like you are swinging across New York City. You do not feel like you're swinging across New York City when you play Spider-Man in this game, which is just a terrible feeling to have. Especially, I think this is after the Spider-Man 2 that's so lauded for its web-slinging and the open-world adaptation. It's very disappointing when you want to feel like you're in New York and you're not in New York.
Yeah, because Spider-Man 2 was 2004, so that's, I mean, maybe not a whole year, but long enough to where they at least should have realized, oh, crap.
Yeah, you can't go back from that, right? You can't, you can't go back to the weird platforming after someone has experienced that kind of movement. Ultimately very disappointing.
And if you knew somebody who... Oh, I can't even ask like that, because of course we do. I know you know somebody who wants to get into Marvel. Would you hand them this game as a way to just get into Marvel in general?
I've been thinking about this question a lot as I watch the videos again and I read through the comics, and I think I would say today, no. Today, I would not give this game to someone. But when I was 15, if I had a friend that really wanted to find out what Marvel was about, I would have lent it to them for the weekend, or I would have told them, go to Blockbuster and check it out. And I would have warned them that, like, it's not what you want it to be, but I would have said, it's worth playing once, and the good stuff that's in it is the good stuff in the comics. The bad stuff that's in it is not in the comics. So if this intrigues you, then, buddy, I've got Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1 with your name on it. Give it a go. So yeah, today, no, but once upon a time, it could have served as an interesting intro into, for all of its flaws, for all of its many flaws as a game, I think that it could have actually worked to spark that interest.
This one just sits in such a weird spot because of that kind of thing. You have so many characters. I mean, there's nothing super particularly wrong about any of them. There's no, like, glaring factual inaccuracies in this. There's nothing that at least as the comics existed at the time, you could sit there and say, oh, this is so much better. I mean, it's all fairly recent stuff for the comics as I understand it. And yet, you just have to find somebody who can get past the gameplay aspects of it. Which, as you said, would have been a whole lot easier, you know, 15, I don't want to think about it. Oh, gosh, it was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, a long time, unfortunately. I flashed back and felt a little bit young for a bit when I was watching the gameplay videos. And then I did the research and realized when this came out and everything that was happening, boy, yeah, I feel very old.
I could conceivably be this game's father. I mean, it would be bad and my mom would have killed me if I was this game's father, but still.
Yeah. Oh, what a disappointing child to have too.
I know, right?
This is Marvel Nemesis : Rise of the Imperfects. If it were your child, would have been like in third grade in the gifted class, right? It had all of these ideas that were great, but then as soon as it grew up, as soon as it went and was actually tested, it miserably failed everything. It miserably failed everything and then spent the rest of its life making tweets about how it had been a gifted child in third grade. That's what Marvel Rise of the Imperfects is. I'm glad I'm not that parent.
I think that's the perfect note to end on here too, because you can't get a better description than that for anything. Robert, it's been great having you on. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
So my Twitter is at Robert Secundus. If you follow that, then I hope to be launching a video essay series soon and a Patreon soon. It's not up yet. It's been in the works for a while. Mostly my writing is on
comicxf.com,
where at the moment I cover X-Men and Immortal Hulk. We have an emphasis on dialogue-based criticism, which if you like podcasts, you are going to like that kind of criticism. It's like sitting down and reading an abbreviated podcast with your friends.
So the website that Robert writes for changed names, and in the interest of not confusing everybody, I tried to make myself sound like a robot saying the new name of the site. It is comicsxf.com, comicsxf.com. And, you know, as always, links in the show notes, all that fun stuff. But let's get back to the show and finish this thing up.
So you can check me out there. And I'll also have other kinds of reviews and sometimes deep dives into things. If you, like me, like looking at interesting failures, I have an extended analysis of Chuck Austin's Holy War, one of the worst comics ever written, and the preceding Joe Casey run, and the way it uses Nightcrawler, which would be a great like first thing to read on the website if you wanted like an intro to the kind of stuff we do there.
I know this isn't what you meant, but you said Holy War, and I instantly thought of the Batman Holy Terror. Which is also bad in its own special way.
Yeah, though that is bad to the extent where I am no longer interested in the way it fails. I just, I want to avoid, if at any point in my life I am reading Batman Holy Terror, something has gone horribly wrong, I think. That's something where, you know, Chuck Austin is bad, is very bad, and oftentimes offensive. But he's not worst comic of all time offensive. He's just worst X-Men comic of all time offensive.
Well, fortunately, you are good with words.
Thank you. I try to be sometimes.
What I've seen, you pull it off well. Granted, I haven't read all the Hox Pox Tox Dox Fox because I want to read the comics first.
There's a lot of them now. But they're up there, so for anyone catching up, we have teams covering literally every X-Men comic that has come out since Hox Pox. So if you want like a commentary track after you read a comic, just head on over to Xavier Files. They'll be there waiting for you.
And obviously, we'll have links to all that down in the show notes because it's so much easier than trying to spell things. And as always, if you want to follow me, best place is over on Twitter, PlayComicsCast. I've been having a lot more, let's call it fun, on the Twitter account lately. I'm just going to leave it at that. But if you want to go see for yourself what that means, go follow me on Twitter, or you can head on over to playcomics.com, where I have links to all the other social media stuff, which quite frankly doesn't get used as much, and you know, that just kind of is what it is. If you want to check out some other wonderfully geeky shows, you can head on over to gonnageek.com, where you can check out all the other shows that are on the network that I'm on. If you like the music that I'm rudely talking on top of right now, you can head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music. You can head on over to Patreon, where if you support Play Comics for at least $1 a month, you can get these episodes as I finish them instead of the weekly Sunday release that they are usually released on. And, you know, various levels will get you stickers and other stuff too. But the main draw there, get the episodes as they finish and don't have to wait. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and find yourself a new favorite character. This one just sits in... This one, man, words aren't happening today.